Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Prahlad, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu, text number 52. Dharmam artha kamam cha.
Dharmam artha kamam cha.
Nitaram janu parvasha. Purvasha. Parada yo chita rajan. Parishta vanata. Dharmam, mundane occupational duty. Ardham, economic development. Cha, and kamam, sense gratification. Cha, and nitaram, always. Cha and anupurvasha, according to order, or from the beginning to the end. Paradaya, unto Prahlad Maharaj. Uchatu, they spoke. Rajan, O King. Prasrita, who was humble. Avanataya, and submissive. Cha, also. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, Shanda and Amarika systematically and unceasingly taught Prahlad Maharaj, who is very submissive and humble, about mundane religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Purport. There are four processes for human society: dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, and they culminate in liberation. Human society must follow a process of religion to advance. And on the basis of religion, one should try to develop his economic condition so that he can fulfill his needs for sense gratification, according to the religious rules and regulations. Then liberation from material bondage will be easier to obtain. That is the Vedic process. When one is above the stages of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, one becomes a devotee. He is then on the platform from which he is guaranteed not to fall again to the material existence. Yajyatva nivartante. As advised in Bhagavad Gita, if one transcends these four processes and is actually liberated, one engages in devotional service, then he is guaranteed not to fall to material existence again. Dharmam artha jakamam cha nitaram Chanu Purvashaha Parada Yochi Chatu Rajan Prasrita Vatnatayacha. Thereafter, Shanda and Amarika systematically and unceasingly taught Prahlad Maharaj, who was very submissive and humble, about mundane religion, economic development, and sense gratification. As it says in the Bhagavatam, Nite Vidu Swartikatim Hi Vishnu. Generally, people don't know that the aim of life is to obtain Krishna or Vishnu. Dharashya Ye Bahya Arthamanina, and they're interested in other things, material things, insignificant things. Therefore, Varnashram is there so that while one has material interests, one can fulfill those interests and at the same time obtain some association with Krishna. Now everyone is on a different level of modes of material nature. Everyone has acquired different modes of material nature. And therefore varna and ashram is arranged so that one is able to fulfill one's desire and at the same time make some progress. Chatura vidha bhajante mam jana sukriti arjanashi. Chatura vanyam maya shishtyam guna karma vibhagashaha tasya karturam apimam vidikarturam aviyam. According to the modes of material nature that one has is acquired, there are different kinds of duties. That this is the eternal principle. Now, of course, we have no idea in Kali Yuga what kind of body we have. All we know is, practically speaking, that it eats, sleeps, and sometimes mates and defends. That much we know. Other things we're not very familiar with, exactly how the body's working. But as long as it can eat and sleep, then we're pretty much happy. Then that's what we think we've actually, that's about as much knowledge as we need to succeed in the world. But Vanashram is meant to not only help us eat and sleep properly, and even mate and defend properly, but also to gradually purify our consciousness so we come to our original level of Krishna consciousness. In our original level of Krishna consciousness, everything is enjoyable. No matter what's happening, everything is spiritual. And at the same time, we're experiencing Krishna. And Krishna is a reservoir of all sweetness, all happiness, and all pleasure. And therefore, in any circumstance, material circumstance, we're undisturbed because material life is just, to us, it seems very real. But, well, just like at night, we may be having a dream. One can remember, or even during the daytime sometimes, we're having dreams. That if one can remember his dream, one doesn't take it very seriously. Like I was, last night in my dream, I was taking a French test, I believe. And I was anxiety about passing it. I didn't get back my score though. So I couldn't tell you if I passed the test. And that was probably, I was studying language. I think I looked at something about language before I went to sleep, so obviously it carried over. But whether I passed the test or not, it wouldn't make any difference. Because if I failed the test, I probably would be too distressed to give the class to someone. But in any case, it probably wouldn't have influenced my life very much. Similarly, when we wake up from this material dream and we realize that material existence is just different combinations of the same gross and subtle elements, then we won't be so much disturbed by material existence anymore. If at all, if one is actually awake, one will see actually the essential point of the material existence is simply to help people become conscious of Krishna again. And as much as one is going towards Krishna, as one is actually utilizing one's existence to make some progress in some ways towards Krishna, then it's meaningful. Otherwise, it's completely meaningless. So that's difficult to understand when you're in the midst of a dream. And therefore, in spite of the fact that we're in the midst of the dream, we should have enough intelligence to try to wake up. So that generally was the Brahmins, was to help people live their life in such a way that they gradually wake up. And the first person they would instruct, as a matter of fact, probably the only people they really instruct were the Kshatriyas. What is Dharma for the society? Dharma means to regulate the senses in some way in relationship to Vishnu. The Brahmins, their duty was generally to perform sacrifice, learn how to chant the mantras for the sacrifice, and by that mantras for the sacrifice, Krishna says, then everything would be provided materially and spiritually. Now nowadays people don't believe, their only sacrifice they believe in is Yajna Vai Jagna Agni. Does anyone know what Jagna Agni is? At least we'll learn one thing from this class. What is Jagna Agni? Chatta Agni. Jagna Agni is the fire of digestion. So, sacrifice is always there. You know, usually there's a fire, so we throw our offering into our fire of digestion. Swaha. Jagavai Vishnu. Ah. Jai Vishnu. Ah. And by such a sacrifice, we become satisfied. So it is actually a sacrifice. And generally that sacrifice is really for the Brahmins. It says that Krishna eats through the mouths of the Brahmins. That's why it's good to take second initiation. Then when they bring all the mahasweets, hey, come over here. I want to feed Vishnu. You've eaten too much. No, it's not for me, it's for Vishnu. I'm detached. You don't like Vishnu? Called Bhoja Brahman. So that sacrifice, generally the Kshatriyas would arrange the sacrifice, and they get the Vaishyas in order to provide the resources for the sacrifice. And the Shudras would assist in the sacrifice in getting the resources. They assist the other. And then the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas would lay out the sacrifice and the Brahmins would be there. And they'd chant the mantras. So the mantras were the essential point because the mantras were in relation to Vishnu and Krishna and his name is non-different. So although they went through a whole elaborate thing to perform the sacrifice, but actually the sense of the sacrifice was the chanting of the mantras. So in one sense, even our fire sacrifices, although we're also throwing something into the fire, we're not throwing jewels and gold and other things, nor are we performing the chanting of mantras to prove that we can chant the mantras powerfully or efficiently. Or effectively. So they'd have a horse. Well, first of all, as we know, that they chant the mantra and then they'd light the fire by the mantra. Nowadays, our Brahmins, they have a fire and a sacrifice. They put some chemical on the wood that ignites in exactly 5 minutes and they have their watch. And after 5 minutes, Agni! Swaha! And then Agni would come and everyone would look at me, wow! He must have been really practicing. But the Brahmins would have to actually, they had no chemical to light the fire. They'd chant the mantra and the fire would light. In order to come to that platform from childhood, from the age of five, Kumara Acharat Pragya, they'd have to start learning how to chant mantras. They went to school. They didn't learn math, generally speaking. They didn't learn poetry. They didn't learn any of these things that we learned. Geography. The only geography you had to know was how to get from where you were sleeping to the place to school. That was the only geography. And you had to know where the Prashadam Hall was. And if you know those things, you had perfected your geography. Then you have to learn history. History meant all the other students who were doing the same thing as you did. The elder students told you where the Prashadam Hall was, where you slept, and where you went to school. That was history. Simple life. No internet. God, no internet. How did the people live? What did they do? Don't tell me they didn't have a phone. No. This must have been the time when the dinosaurs were roaming. So So a very simple life, no distraction. They were living in the forest. And there's nothing. There's no movies, internet, there's no magazines, there's nothing to gossip about because you couldn't find out what was going on anywhere. It takes one 5 days to find out where you were. But at that time there's no news anymore. So, you know, the only thing that they do is concentrate on learning how to chant the mantras perfectly. So to learn one letter like ah, because no one knows if I chanted it perfectly or not, probably anyhow. And we're going to repeat, ah.
Ah.
Ah, see, you need a lot of practice. To chant one letter, ah, sometimes it would take 6 months to learn how to chant it properly. Could you imagine 6 months, ah, ah, no, try again, ah, ah. So you'd have to have a lot of patience. But since there's nothing else to do, and you didn't get prasadam if you didn't learn, therefore 6 months later, ah, oh, perfect, you got it. I can tell the difference immediately. And after learning this, the Sparsha alphabet for like 18 years or something, then you can chant the mantras perfectly. And then you'd get trained up how to perform sacrifices. And you also have to have learned the Vedas. You have to not only memorize them directly, in other words, you know, we have Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, that's direct, but then you have to learn them backwards. Vasudev Om Bhagavate Om. So you have to learn all the Vedas forward, and then you have to learn them backwards. So that kept you busy. And then you have to learn every other word of the Vedas. In other words, if you have a verse like Deinos Minyata Dehe Komaram Yobanam Dura, then they have to learn Dehi no smin. No, Dehi no yata, Dehi no yata, and then komara. Then you have to learn every other word. And then you have to learn every other word backwards. And then you have to learn every third word. And every third word backwards. So by the time you got finished, you know, at night you would be dreaming of chanting the Vedas. Someone would say something and you go, excuse me, you go, Deinos Min. That's all you knew. What's your name? Yata. So they didn't forget the Vedas, so they were going to actually pass it on. And when they chanted it, they could chant it perfectly, because the whole life, that was their life. That was their existence. And they were effective. Therefore, they got whatever they needed from the Kshatriyas, because they could change the whole world. The whole universe they had power over, because of their austerity and because of their learning. They learned the Vedas, and they went through the austerity of learning it. And it was not so easy. For Lord Brahma, what was his austerity? He did austerity for 1,000 years of the demigods. So did he fast for 1,000 years? No, there was nothing to eat anyhow. He was on a lotus flower. Maybe he looked at the lotus flower, I wonder what that tastes like. Why, I need something, I'll break up a little piece. It's terrible, my God, but I'm hungry. Anything else in the stem or something? No, the austerity was, there's nothing to eat. Therefore, when you see a little Brahma, you never see a fat Brahma. The austerity was controlling the mind. It took him 1,000 years of the demigods to control his mind. Fix it on, and what was he fixing on? Ta-pa. He had heard these two words from these from the alphabet tapa, which means austerity. That's why it means austerity, because that's what he did. He was meditating on these words for 1,000 years of the demigods. That's why it means austerity. And finally, he fixed his mind on these words, and then he was able to see the spiritual world. Or as Krishna says, Udharat atmanatmanam atmanam avasaraya atmavi atmano bandura amaiva ripur atmanaha bandura atmanastasya ina vatmanakita ina anatmanastu shatrudve vartetat maiva shatrudva chitatmana prasantasya paramatma samahita chitoshna sukadukeshu tatamana pamaniya. A man has to elevate himself by his own mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul, and his enemy is the will. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is very weak. For he has attained tranquility. For such a person, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. So the whole aim of Vedic culture is to control the mind. Now, if we don't know that, then we're not going to be very much. We don't realize what's happening, what we're doing. Why are we going through all this austerity? Why are we doing what we're doing? It's to control the mind. And how do we know when the mind is not controlled? Well, generally speaking, we don't know when the mind is not controlled, because our mind is uncontrolled. Unless we have the intelligence to understand that, unless we're practicing controlling the mind, people don't know unless they're practicing to control their mind. They don't know that their mind is uncontrolled. They think that they are their mind. If you ask someone about what they mean, believe, they, yes, I believe in spirit. I believe in the spirit. What they mean is they believe in their mind. They believe their mind is the spirit. So our aim is simply to control the mind. And what's the result of controlling the mind? We can pay attention. That's it. When we're in ignorance, we're dreaming. Even more than we already. We're simply falling deeper into sleep. We're already asleep, but sleeping is simply more of a sleep, deeper sleep. And when we're in passion, we're agitated. We're not sleeping, we're conscious, but we're conscious of our senses generally in passion, what they desire and how to fulfill them. And in goodness, we're more conscious. When the mind is actually controlled, then we become more and more conscious. As we become free from lust, anger, and greed, then our clarity of mind increases. Not only the mind thinks on one thing, but the clarity of the mind increases, and then eventually we'll realize that we're with Krishna all the time. That's called Brahman and Paramatman realization. And at that stage, when we hear about Krishna, then we actually experience that Krishna and Krishna's name and Krishna are not different. That thinking about Krishna is actually to be directly with Krishna. So that's the aim of Varnashram, is to purify the mind so that we realize that we're eternal. That's called liberation. Liberation doesn't mean I realize I'm eternal and I shoot out the top of my head into Brahman. That's not that is an object of realization. That is a type of realization. But simply to, when my mind becomes purified and I realize I'm eternal, I could be doing the same thing I'm already doing. I'll look the same. It's not that when we become liberated, we get four heads instead of one. You look in the mirror, wow, I'm getting there. Two. No, that's three. I'm almost there. I get, what is that other arm? Yeah, I got two extra arms. Wow. Look at me. No, it means that we simply realize that we're eternal. We realize what's reality. And when we become deeper into that reality, then we realize Krishna is in our heart, giving us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. He's our constant guide and companion. And at that time, we can actually hear with attention, and we become interested in hearing about Krishna, that we have the proper association. Because when we realize we're eternal, then we're free from anxiety. We're peaceful. When we realize Paramatma, then we actually have some knowledge that Krishna is the controller. but only when we come in association with the devotees and hear about Krishna with a proper attitude and the proper consciousness, then we become blissful. We fall in love with Krishna. We fall in love with everyone, everything in relation to Krishna. Then our life actually has some real meaning, because life is meant for happiness. It's meant for pleasure and for ultimately love. That's why everyone is always singing about happiness and love and pleasure in the material world, because it doesn't exist. But everyone's talking about it, because they know it exists somewhere, and every advertisement is claiming it exists in my product. If you get this toothpaste, this is where bliss, knowledge, and eternity exist in. As soon as it touches your teeth will stand on end. Your hair will stand on end. You'll be shivering in the body. And then you realize what the real truth is, our toothpaste. So people think, well, I tried everything else, I might as well try his toothpaste. See if there's some bliss there. And when people see your smile, they realize, yes, he's enlightened. His teeth have become white and he's become enlightened. So that's everything everyone is promising. Take shelter of me, do this or do that, and you'll get bliss, knowledge, and eternity. But the real secret is take shelter of the Vedas, ultimately come to the platform realizing that we're eternal, that we're servants of Krishna, he's Paramatma, he's directing us. And then when we actually hear about Krishna, then we'll be in ecstasy, in association with Krishna, and our love for Krishna will naturally be awakened. So of course we're not going through the Vanashram system, which is that, in one sense, the Vanashram system is an advantage if it existed. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist. Because in the Vanashram system, everyone knows clearly what your duty is, and if you don't do it, there's a lot of social pressure to do it. Now there's a lot of social pressure not to do it. As I said before, one Madhaji, one devotee, she was living with another devotee for 23 years. They weren't married. And they had 3 children. And one day they decided to get married. So, the lady, the devotee lady, she went to her mother and said, "Mom, I have good news for you. That myself and such devotee, after 23 years, we decided to get married." So her mother grabbed her hand and said, "Wait, be careful. Are you sure he's the right man?" So the modern culture is not meant to encourage people to follow any kind of regulated system. Matter of fact, someone says, "I've been married for 50 years now." And they say, "Wow, that's amazing. Because I've been married to 4 ladies in that 50 years. It's not a problem." So we have to appreciate that in the Vanashram system, it makes life simple. There's not so much to speculate about. And the aim is really clear. That my aim is not to move up the ladder. And people wonder, wow, it's a stratified system. This poor lady is going to have to remain a lady for the next her whole life. She can't become a man. She can't go up the ladder. And this man, he doesn't want to go up the ladder. He wants to become a lady, but he has to stay a man. This is a really hard system. Or he's born a Shudra. He has to remain a Shudra. He wants to go to become a Brahmin, but he can't do it. But people don't care about that in the Vedic system. What they care about is that they're actually going to make progress purifying their consciousness. And when they purify their consciousness, it doesn't matter to them at all what their situation is, because they realize they're not their body. And for a Shudra, to be a Shudra, it's good to work as a Shudra. Because it keeps you humble. And the Brahmins, unless they're humble, they're no longer Brahmins. In other words, it's not that as you go up the ladder, you become more proud. You actually become more humble. As it says in the basic principle of Shudra in the 16th chapter, is that they're humble. They have a service attitude. And that's developed as one goes up the ladder, so-called up the ladder, from a Vaishya to a Kshatriya to a Brahmin. You become more and more humble as you realize how great and wonderful Krishna is, how great and wonderful Krishna's energies are. You don't become less humble, you become more humble. And therefore the Shudras who are learning to become humble, they don't resent the Brahmins or the Kshatriyas or the Vaishyas because they see that they're more humble than I am. They don't have less qualities, they have more qualities, good qualities. And therefore they serve them because they want to get the good qualities too. They appreciate it. Modern society, the higher you go up, the less qualities you have. The more you become like an animal. You have the little animals according to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And as you go up the ladder, you become a bigger animal. Otherwise you can't go up the ladder. You gotta knock off all the other little animals from the ladder before you can go up. Therefore, our fortune is we have a very simple process. And if we take to it, we could see whether we're actually making progress by how much my mind is actually thinking about Krishna and how much I'm becoming detached from other kinds of thoughts. Now other kinds of thoughts will come because we're conditioned. But how much I'm detached from them and how much I'm trying to focus my mind upon Krishna when I'm chanting Hare Krishna or doing devotional service and chanting with care and attention or doing devotional service with care and attention. And even if there's some distraction from our minds, then we simply, as Krishna says, yato yato nischalati tatas manatam tato nito nischalati manam chancham astiram tatastato niyam yaitat atman yeva vishamneyat. Wherever the mind wanders to, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one should withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. So although we should be a little disappointed if we forget about Krishna, our minds wander and we forget about Krishna, still we can start over again and bring it back under the control of Krishna. Bring it back trying to think about Krishna and try to become detached from these thoughts that are coming, not to take them so seriously. So we control our senses at least so that we're working on the intellectual platform, trying to control our mind, then we can gradually make some progress. The problem is when we get off the mental platform onto the sensual platform, and then we generally get lost somewhere. Of course, we can't stay on the mental platform. We have to come to the intellectual platform and utilize our intelligence to control our mind. Otherwise our intelligence will constantly control our intelligence. Our mind will constantly control our intelligence. Not only will we make progress, but we'll become degraded into serving our senses instead of our intelligence, instead of Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
What are you saying about this performing fire sacrifices and in Vedic times, people were qualified because they were pronouncing mantras well. So when we are doing the fire sacrifice, what should we focus on that we would have the, you know, biggest result or the...
The holy names. Chanting the mantras, glorifying our acharyas, and the holy name. That's it. That's all. The whole idea. And of course, the deities are there, the vows are taken in front of the deities, in front of the fire, in front of the devotees, so that one feels some sense of obligation that I'm actually giving up my false ego and accepting the spiritual master. I'm a servant of the spiritual master, and through the spiritual master I'm learning how to become a servant of Krishna's service under the guidance of the acharyas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna. That's it. That's what you... Simple. Otherwise, you have big, you know, elaborate sacrifice, you chant the name of all the demigods, and etc. It doesn't really have any meaning to what we're actually trying to accomplish. And of course, when we chant mantras and throw the grains in the fire, nothing really happens except that hopefully we hit the fire. So we don't have to sweep up so many grains. That's the main thing, to try to aim for the fire. So that we don't have to step on the grains when we're circumambulating the fire. Other than that, nothing much is happening. Because you can't even eat the grains. Hopefully there's some feast they prepare afterwards. Even the bananas you put in there are inedible. So the main thing is the consciousness, the vow, was taking place that you're doing in front of devotees, so that someone might say, well, you have some social pressure, the deities, the devotees, etc. You're taking a vow.
Thank you for the lecture. My mentor once said that sometimes, or maybe usually, we dream that we are awake. I mean, I can see that time destroys everything. So present, past is like a dream, and present moment awaits the same destiny. So it's somehow logical. It's a dream. But then again, without Krishna, this notion of a dream only fits my false ego. I am awake, and all those fools are in a dream. And sometimes I think, like, this life is a dream, but does it help me? Because as Srila Prabhupada says in Purport to 6.8, they speak a lot about the dream, but they are very expert in enjoying the dream. So does it help me? When do I know I'm really awake? Because it leads me in the wrong direction, I think.
When we meet Krishna face to face, then we know we're awake. Then when we look in the mirror, we see Krishna in our spiritual body together. Then we know we're awake. Otherwise, we're different degrees of sleeping. Of course, they're not all equal. Devotional service itself is non-different from the kingdom of God. So we may not be completely awake, but we're waking up when we're performing devotional service.
When we have some compassion for those sleeping beings, because sometimes when I think I'm awake, I'm actually despising other people.
Yeah, that's a symptom of being fast asleep. There's no such thing in pure devotion. So devotional service is not only external, it's also the proper vision, proper mood, the proper, you know. So that's devotional service. Otherwise, it's actually not pure devotional service, it's mixed. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.